The date is June 17th, 1983, and we're watching Superman 3. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Clark to my Kent.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So, Colin, I need to take a moment here and say, we made it. We've made it to triple digits, buddy.
Wow. I don't know if I ever thought it could happen, but it did.
It did. It did happen. Didn't necessarily pick the most glorious movie for it, but we picked the most glorious guest we could. He's the host of a podcast called the RPG Academy, and also one that both Colin and I have appeared on, the Smallville fan cast, Farm to Fable. Please welcome back Mr. Michael Ross.
Hello! So thrilled to be back. I'm so excited to be doing a Superman movie. I'm really thrilled that you keep having me back. Eventually, I'm just going to burn the whole thing down, but we're not there yet, so...
I was wondering, Michael, have you sent a cease and desist to Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling for stealing your idea?
No, but I have to say there has been some, like, I'm on the Reddit a lot, and every week there's multiple Reddit posts about the Talkville, and every now and then in the comments I'll be like, hey, don't forget there are other podcasts. We may not have the celebrity, guests and behind the scenes, but we take the show a lot more seriously than these guys do.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing, I listened to the first couple, but I kind of think Michael Rosenbaum is sort of not a great host for that show. I really like his other show, Inside of You. I think that's a really good show. But he seems to just not like Smallville.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like...
And it's just constantly like, yeah, that was bad. Yeah, that was bad. Like, I want someone who at least likes it. And then they don't go into any real depth of, like, what this actually means. And so, again, I know they will be 1,000 times more popular than we are, but... I think we do offer something they
well,
don't.
Well, yeah. I haven't listened to a single episode because I, have to be solidarity with Farm to Fable. So, I listen to Inside of You as well, and I do imagine even when Tom Welling's been on that podcast, like neither of them seem to like have that many fond memories. Like I'm listening to the Boy Meets World rewatch podcast with those guys. And they like love that show, and it's really interesting to listen to them talk about it. But those guys, whenever I've heard them talk about it, it's always like, "Well, the producer, it was such a shitty time. Like it was so hard. Like they treated us like shit." Like, and so I can't even imagine what they have to talk about when it comes to that show. But yeah. Anyways.
Well, my general sense is that Tom likes the show more than Michael does, and so there's a lot of like Tom trying to like it and then Michael not. But again, I've only listened to a few.
Yeah, I have listened to it as well. I'm sorry, Michael. But I do find that it's a nice compliment to Farm to Fable. Like, I definitely am a fan of both. But, it's not better. But it is, it's a nice side dish to Farm to Fable, I think. Like you said, you take yours far more seriously.
Probably too much.
But yes. Yeah, that's how we know each other, is through Superman. So I'm excited for this episode. We are looking back at June 1983, the 45th anniversary of the Superman character, when the movies and theaters were Octopussy, The Man with Two Brains, Psycho 3, the subject of episode 21, Trading Places, and of course our movie for today, Superman 3, which earned $59.9 million on a $39 million budget.
Which in 1983 dollars, that ain't bad, but compared to the first two, it's not good.
Yeah. No, it's not.
But as always, we will be dropping spoilers like frozen lake plates onto a cloud of burning fire.
Burning acid.
There we go. So if you don't want, acid spoilers in your face, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have four this week. The first is, Even when faced with a trio of supervillains from his home planet, Superman saved the day. If the world's most powerful computer can control even Superman, no one on Earth is safe.
That is way too long of a tagline.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds also, like the opening banner of a comic book is what that sounds like. Yeah.
And it also seems like, remember the other one that you really liked? Keep that one in mind the whole time, please.
It sounds like you need the announcer from the classic Batman series to be, you know, saying that one. Even when faced with a trio of supervillains, you know, like, come back next time. Same bat time, same bat channel. Well, second up, we have the boring one that just name drops. Alexander Salkind presents Christopher Reeve and Richard Pryor as you've never seen them before, with more action, more twists, and more fun than Superman had ever had before.
Sure.
Pass.
Okay, time to get into the shorter ones. Number three, the world's superhero in his toughest adventure yet.
I mean, that's not bad. I don't know that it's accurate, but that's a better tagline than the first two.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so generic that it could be applied to any movie, but least of all this one.
Well, next up, finally, Superman versus the King of Computerized Crime.
That's not bad. I think that's my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, this movie was originally going to be called Superman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Until the producers of Kramer versus Kramer threatened to sue.
Which has got to be the dumbest thing ever.
Like, that's a ridiculous
lawsuit. Are you really going to get like market confusion about, wait, is this about Superman or is this like a law movie? No, it's Superman versus Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, with the King of Computerized Crime, this movie was also supposed to originally involve Brainiac and Mr. Mitzelpidelic.
Not bad. That's pretty good.
Interesting.
Can you say it backwards, though?
No, I can't.
Yeah.
And it was going to introduce Supergirl as well.
Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been a better movie.
It might have been.
They're like, I will say as we go along, but like one of my main like things about this movie is there was a far better movie to be had.
Yeah.
That just wasn't.
Yeah.
I do think, I mean, the big thing here is Richard Pryor. Like, I think that is absolutely the thing that you, if you love this movie, it's probably because of Richard Pryor. And if you dislike this movie, it's probably because of Richard Pryor because he's such a huge part of the movie.
Yeah.
And, like, again, I'm sure I read the same behind-the-scenes stuff you did, that he basically got the job because he has a little bit that he was doing about Superman. And he was on a talk show and he was talking about, I want to be in the next Superman. And he didn't really mean it. He was just like doing a bit. So they hired him and he had absolutely no connection. He didn't want to do the movie, but he got paid a lot of money in 1983 to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then the script wasn't very good. And apparently there was like a whole big hubbubaloo where Christopher Reeve wasn't going to do it. And then they were going to recast. And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, I guess I'll do it, but I want to be able to fix the script. They said, sure. Then he made no changes to the script. It's kind of a weird thing, and then this is the first one without Donner behind the camera. There's just so much going for this one. It's just hard. There's a lot of hard in this movie, but I will say, I was 7 years old when this movie came out, and I guarantee you I saw it in the theater that weekend. Almost guarantee it, certainly within a few weeks. And I had very fond memories of this movie. I love Superman, I love superheroes. But I don't think I've watched this in probably 30 years. I mean, you probably weren't alive the last time I watched this movie. And I was terrified that I was going to hate it. And I didn't. It's not great. But I laughed at parts. I thought, Superman was being Superman. So I would give it like a B-, maybe a C+, but it wasn't terrible. It's just not good, especially compared to like what we get now in the latest, Marvel movies and that kind of thing. But I would watch this over Dawn of Justice any day.
So I guess Michael has a hard out because he jumped right to the end of our podcast.
Sorry.
Because we're still talking about taglines, which may not be very good descriptions of this movie. So Colin, for the 100th time, why don't you give us a 60-second synopsis?
Ah! After he's denied further unemployment benefits, Gus Gorman decides to become a computer programmer and discovers he has a real knack for it. So much so that when he discovers he has to pay taxes, he works his computer magic to siphon off unclaimed money from his employer into his own account. I just wanted to put a side note that this is apparently referred to as salami slicing. This brings him to the attention of CEO Ross Webster, who blackmails Gus in order to use his skills to take over a weather satellite and use it to create a tornado that will wipe out the Colombian coffee supply so that he can fill the demand with his own product. Meanwhile, Clark Kent, aka Superman, and his pal Jimmy Olsen travel to Smallville for Clark's high school reunion. On the way, Superman puts out a fire at a chemical plant by freezing the top of a lake and dropping it on the plant. Upon his arrival in Smallville, Clark reconnects with childhood friend Lana Lang at the reunion, and Superman saves her son Ricky from being run over by a combine. He also makes time to fly to Columbia and thwart Webster's plan by inverting the tornado Gus created and drying the ground with his heat vision. Undeterred in his plans to make money, Webster resolves to use Gus again to divert a bunch of oil tankers to cause an energy crisis. In order to get Big Blue out of the way, Gus makes his way to Smallville, where they're having an event to welcome Superman, and dressed as a general, gives him a piece of synthetic kryptonite. But the kryptonite doesn't kill Superman, instead it just turns him into a super asshole. Gus builds a supercomputer to divert the oil ships, but when one decides to maintain its course, Webster sends his girlfriend to seduce the Man of Steel, and he goes and rips a hole in the tanker. Everything comes to a head when evil Superman battles Clark in a scrapyard to the death. Clark wins, but I think we all kind of lose here. Superman is back in the game. He reverses all the damage he's done, most notably welding the hole in the punctured oil tanker with his heat vision. In the end, Gus realizes Webster really is a bad guy. The supercomputer goes out of control. Superman beats it with a lava lamp, finds Gus a new job, and crushes a piece of coal into a diamond for Lana, all in a day's work. That's your 60-second synopsis.
Yeah, I think I had that same note in my notes.
Yeah, I also like fire and oil. Not yeah. Good. Much like oil and water. Don't mix.
No.
Now, anyone who has listened to the other 99 episodes that we've put out will know that we have never covered another Superman movie. And for episode 100, why the fuck are we jumping to number 3 of all the Superman movies? I mean, 4 would be the only worst choice. But now, I don't know if this has been mentioned on mic or off mic, but I have promised Colin a good story about my origins with Superman 3. And he said that anything short of you were in the movie is not going to impress him at this point. But it was filmed in the city I was living in at the time. So, I mean, I was in the city at the same time as Superman at one point in my life. Superman, you said you were 7. I was 4 when this movie came out. Going on 5. I was pushing 5.
Yeah, I would have been 8 within a month.
Yeah. And this is my earliest memory of seeing a movie in the theaters. And so it was an adult cousin that took me to see this movie. And I was excited. I love Superman. I was a little kid that loved Superman. And we go to the movie and it gets to the junkyard scene. And I am terrified. Like, this movie traumatized me. I did not want to stay anymore. It was the scariest thing. Why would Superman turn evil? So my cousin took me out of the theater, and we instead snuck into Snow White, which was there on a re-release at the time. However, the problem is those movies don't really line up very well. And so we were getting into Snow White right around the time that the dwarves were coming home from work to discover that Snow White was asleep. So there wasn't much Snow White left. And at that point, my cousin said, well, the scary part's probably over. Why don't we sneak back into Superman 3? So we snuck back in just in time for the terrifying computer lady to get made and, you know, all hell to break loose with this terrifying computer. So I was terrified of this movie as a child. This one almost destroyed Superman for me. It was just the most traumatic thing of my childhood up to that point that I can remember. I don't know. I was 4. But yes, that is my story regarding Superman 3, is that I was always scared of this movie because my cousin traumatized me with it twice. Like, the sneaking back in is the kicker, you know? Colin, I guess we kind of heard about Michael a little bit there. So, Colin, what about you? What is your history with Superman 3?
I have no history with Superman 3 at all. I think we had talked about it. I originally intended to watch, like, the entire Christopher Reeve, like, quartet in preparation for this movie, because I've only ever seen Superman 1, but I have no, like, real recollection of it. But then I was like, maybe instead I'll just watch Superman 3 and get like an untainted view on it as like how it is as a movie. So that's kind of what I did. I don't really have a lot of history with this particular Superman franchise whatsoever, really.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, I can't help but think of the parallels between this and like the 90s Batman series.
Yeah.
Because the first and second one in the Superman series are the best ones in this series. And I like the second one the most, actually. Just because they sum up the whole slow first one in the first 10 minutes. And it's perfect. That's the perfect amount of Superman 1. So I just think Superman 2 is a much better movie. But yeah, then it gets campy and it gets kind of dumb and it loses its vision. They, you know, they take out Tim Burton and they give it to Schumacher. This is the case of, you know, they fire Donner and they bring in whoever this other guy is. I guess that's
Alexander Salkind.
Well, no, but Donner was also the director, so it was Richard Lester that they brought in. Yeah, I mean, let's jump into Superman 3, directed by Richard Lester, produced by Pierre Spangler, written by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, of course, and David Newman, Leslie Newman, and Mario Puzo, who is uncredited but has characters because he wrote the first Superman movie. But I can't help looking at the parallels of this particular franchise to those Batman movies, because this is where it gets silly. Kind of like Thor. You know, the Ragnarok's where it starts to get silly, and then the fourth one is where it goes off the rails. Because if you didn't like 3, Colin, boy, you better not watch Quest for Peace.
Whew. Well, yeah, I mean,
Quest for Peace is a disaster.
Yeah.
I listened to this, there's like a really good book. I listened to the audiobook, but it's like, it's called Superman, the Unauthorized Biography by Glenn Weldon, if anybody wants to check it out. And yeah, the way they described the Quest for Peace is basically it was like kind of they wanted to do a fourth movie and Christopher Reeve would only come back and do it if they like let him do this like anti-nuclear movie because he was all about, I don't know, he was all about that. And yeah, it sounds awful. I don't know that I will ever watch it. I also don't understand like why in the last movie they decide to put a title after the number. I hate that. Like, just leave it at 4.
Yeah.
Well, this one, again, was originally going to be Superman versus Superman, and it wasn't until they got threatened that they changed it to Superman 3.
Like, I guess so,
there was just, they wanted to do the subtitles, and I think, isn't that what also happened with Batman? The first two were Batman 1 and Batman 2, and then Batman 3 got the subtitle.
Forever, and yeah. And,
no, because Batman and Robin. Batman Returns.
Yeah, Batman Returns. Yeah, Batman Returns. Okay. Yeah.
But it still wasn't the subtitle. It was just a different title, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Somewhat on subject, but not directly related. But there's a podcast I listened to, I think I mentioned before, How Did This Get Made, which is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. And one of their very early episodes, which is probably behind the paywall now, they did an episode where they interviewed Jack O'Halloran, who played Non in Superman 2, like the big kind of mute Kryptonian. That is worth tracking down and listen to, because he's just throwing just truth about the process of like people weren't getting paid. He had at one point was like holding the producer up by the lapels and was shaking him going, you are going to effing pay me this week or I'm going to break your hands. Like, he was just like, it's wild to listen to that interview. Definitely worth a listen.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, we open this movie with the Department of Human Resources, where Gus is trying to get some unemployment benefits. And you know what? I decided it's the 100th episode. We have to do a little I Used to Like This One Piece theater. So yeah, every time Colin and I visit Michael's show, we end up having to do a reading of that episode. It's a tradition for every co-host that Michael has on Farm to Fable. And so we have the segment that we like to do it on our show as well. And Michael has done one of these before with us. But I've decided that I want to let Michael do another one for us. Here I have the scene between Gus and the unemployment clerk. So who wants Gus? Who wants the unemployment clerk?
I'm sitting
this one out. I'm watching
for
the
unemployment clerk.
Okay. I'm watching for the 100.
All right.
Do I have a script? I don't have a script. Where's my script?
I sent it to your messenger.
Okay. Okay. All right. I think I'm ready. Next. Name.
Gus Gorman.
Yes. August Gorman. Have you looked for work this week, Mr. Gorman?
Yeah.
What kind?
Kitchen technician.
Dishwasher? Any luck?
Nope, but...
Mr. Gorman, according to our records, you've been unemployed for 36 weeks.
35.
Not counting this week. You secured employment last June as a messenger and were discharged after one day for...
They said I lost it on the subway, but it ain't the truth. It was a pickpocket took it.
A television set?
It was one of them little eensy-bincy two-inch screen Japanese jobs.
The only other employment you found was in fast food joint, which lasted 28 minutes? Well, that's some kind of record. Talk about fast.
You know, they expect you to learn all that on the first day. Hold the pickle, hold the lettuce, extra onion, special sauce, no special sauce. Ain't nobody found no meat inside that glop yet.
Mr. Gorman, the city of Metropolis is generous to a fault. The 36 weeks of chronic unemployment, 36 weeks of living off the taxes of hardworking citizens. Do you know what you are?
Don't call me a bum. I ain't no bum.
You are, as I was about to say, no longer eligible.
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater. It was the only real extended scene I could find when I did a quick Google for
my favorite part is how it ends with them smoking inside the unemployment office.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, this is a question I may have for the American, because it may not be the same here. The matchbox that the guy in the line gives to Gus, it is Metropolis 1234567 8 is the number. Yeah. Now, I vaguely remember something like Klondike 5 as being a thing. Is a letter beginning to a phone number something that you are aware of as an American?
No. And that is not a phone number. It should be, even in 83, we had area codes. So it should have been like, you know, parentheses 777 okay. And then some numbers. Like, that is just completely nonsense.
Yeah, I wonder what the, you know, like the KL5, like there's something about that where it's, yeah, I don't know.
It may have, maybe it's a reference to like a Superman comic. I didn't pick up on it, but no, yeah. It was just nonsense. I have to talk about Gus. Okay. So I apologize. I'm jumping ahead. Edit me out, edit around. Gus is not a computer genius. He's a magician. He is Mr. Mitzelpidelic. Yeah. Because he can't just like program computers better than anyone in the world. He could just tell a computer to do a thing and it listens.
Yeah.
That's not how computers work. He's not a computer programmer. He doesn't like go in and like code. He just says, hey, can you make me a sandwich? And some fucking how a sandwich will appear. That's magic. That's not computer science.
Yeah.
I feel like that's 1983 computer science.
Well, that's
like
true.
Now we all know better.
But even then, they could have done like, you know, the X's and the O's and like Matrix style, you know, and then like have some like rerouting through the subnet. Like they didn't try at all to make it look like computer programming. And I think that was intentional. It comes across very clear that he can just say, hey, I want to do two, whatever the coordinates at the same time, whatever. And it's like, okay, I'll do that. You know, you can't turn a satellite and just cause it, create a tornado, but that's what he does. Like he doesn't like tell it to like do a thing to change the atmosphere. No, he's just like create a tornado and it does. Like it's magic. That's all this is.
That's kind of what I was thinking about with all those taglines is like he's not a computer. There is no computer like really controlling Superman for one. And you're right. Like Gus is not, I wouldn't call him a computer genius at all. It just seems like he falls kind of backwards into it. Like he just magic is a good word. And I do, like, I hate Gus, to be honest. I don't like that character at all. There's a bunch of, I don't like any of the way that the antagonists work in this movie in general. Like, I wish they would have pulled from the comics. I hate that everything is made up and has nothing to do with Superman. Like, I would have liked to see Mr. Mixes Pitalik. I would have liked to see Brainiac. I would have even preferred Bizarro to this stupid, like, asshole Superman, like, shit. Like, that is my main complaint of the movie, is, like, Superman is even barely Superman in this movie. Like, I don't know.
It is so wild the way this movie portrays Superman. And okay, I'm jumping way ahead, but after he's turned evil because of the tar infused synthetic kryptonite, there's this whole scene about the start of the Olympics, which this movie is set in 1986, which makes no sense because that's not when the Summer Olympics would have been, but, or 1985, because that's when his 20, there's a whole question about when this movie happens. But anyway, there's like a whole thing where everyone's watching this Olympic runner run up to start the, you know, the inaugural lighting of the torch. Everyone in the theater would be like, holy shit, it's Superman. Like, yeah. No one even cared that he was there until he decides to blow out. Like, that makes no sense. He's just hanging out there like on a balcony and no one even pays any, and is straightening the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Like, is that what Dick Superman does? I don't know. It's so weird. Yeah. And that's what bothers me, is that it's not that it's funny or tries to be funny or campy or silly, is that it fails. Yeah. Horribly at trying to be funny. At one point, I kept writing my notes. Is this supposed to be funny? Is this supposed to be funny? Because there are some genuinely funny moments, but most of them are not funny at all.
Yeah. Well, until I watched it this time, I didn't really realize that, oh yeah, Lois Lane isn't in this movie.
That was wild to me too.
Because they bookend the movie with her. You know, you feel her presence in a way, but you forget that, oh yeah, she's in like 5 minutes of this movie.
Yeah. She, Margot Kidder had a disagreement about the script and everything. And so they're like, okay, cut her out. Like, that wasn't what was supposed to happen, but Margot Kidder was kind of being difficult, which I don't blame her. The script's terrible. So that's why they did that.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, well, we'll bring Lana Lang back.
The weird thing I found about that is that it handicapped the entire Lana Lang story. Because she can never be the real love interest, because you always know, like, Lois is just waiting in the wings. But it's like, I felt like the whole time it's like they get close, there's like a line of which it feels like the directors and producers decided we shall not cross, to where, like, we'll insinuate maybe they kind of were in love with each other, but we won't go so far as to actually show it. So then when, at the end of the movie, when he gives her this diamond ring back, or like, to replace the one that she pocked, it's like, it's such a weird, I don't know, it just makes no sense.
Well, watching this movie in a bottle, I would say that Clark and Superman were in love with Lana, not Lois.
Yeah, totally.
If I hadn't already seen the first two, I wouldn't have even thought Lois was the love interest at all. Yes, because, I mean, he seems genuinely interested. And again, let me say, like, we've talked about Annette O'Toole on Farm to Fable. But dear God, she is smoking hot in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Young Martha Kent there, you know, young Lana Lang. It's, she's a pretty lady. But I also enjoy the fact that they set it up for the possibility that there will be a love triangle in a future Superman movie. But Lana Lang is never heard from again.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, so Colin, so that you don't have to go and watch the fourth one, you know, Lana gets the job at the planet at the end of this movie, but yeah, she's never spoken of again.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that I keep talking about how some things are funny and some things aren't. I genuinely think that the Lana Lang Clark communication, how they constantly are having two conversations that are crossing over and neither one of them knows where the other one's at, I found that charming and funny.
Yeah.
Like when he shows up to the dance and she gives the records to the wrong person and gives the plates to the other person, and then she brings up a thing, and when he responds, she's changed. I thought that was really well done, very sweet. Like, that was more of that, less of that, whatever that nonsensical opening slapstick routine with the blind guy and
I like that.
I hated it. Yeah. The only thing that makes that work for me is in my head canon. That dude who just keeps being the butt of every joke, pie in the face, gets knocked down, gets stepped on, he becomes Joker. This day breaks him, and he is now the Joker after this going forward. That's the only thing that saves that in any way for me.
Nice.
Yeah, that whole thing at the beginning with the, yeah, the blind dude and just the setting off of all these different, you know, issues. I was like, it's also just such a lame way for Superman to, like, be introduced in the movie. I thought, like, I want to, like, emergency. I don't need Superman doesn't need to just be coming in to, like, stop somebody's bad day and, like, I don't know. And why couldn't those people get the door open of that car? Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me elaborate on why I like it so much. Because I am mesmerized by Christopher Reeve as Clark Kent. Now, I've gone over this kind of thing on Farm to Fable with Michael. But that's my favorite thing about Superman, is a good Clark Kent. And on Smallville, I don't necessarily think that he's a good Clark Kent. I love the bumbling Clark Kent. And I don't think Henry Cavill has nailed it. But I think, you know, Christopher Reeve, he's just so much fun to watch. And all the moments, like, where he sizes up the phone booth and it doesn't have any doors on it. The moment where he has to go into the photo booth and just the when it scans. Yeah. So I guess I look past all the stupid shit, like the guy getting pies in the face, because I love what's going on with Christopher Reeve amongst all this chaos. And the kid at the photo booth, incidentally, this is his second time in a Superman movie. That's Aaron Smolinski. He played baby Clark Kent in the first Superman movie.
Oh,
like,
that's
baby
nice.
In the pod Superman, yeah.
I like that. But yeah, there's just, like, I really enjoy the Christopher Reeve portrayal. I think, you know, his Clark Kent, even though it's the same dude, feels like a different person. And
very
you can
much.
Maybe get like, okay, maybe everyone doesn't put two and two together, even though they look so similar, just because no one looks at Clark Kent and thinks, hey, that could be Superman, because he's just so bumbling and, you know, obsequious. It just, I don't know. But just, again, the slapstick stuff didn't work for me. Same thing with, like, when Gus skis off the side of the building and almost die. There's humor. Like, I actually really did kind of like when he got Brad drunk, that whole thing. I thought that was kind of funny when he just drinks him under the table and then he acts drunk. I thought that was, like, I loved the Lana Clark. So there was some actual humor that worked, but they just kept trying to do this other stuff that just the tone shifts were so wild and it did not work.
They Schumachered the franchise.
You're absolutely. I never thought of it, but you're 100%
right.
They
put nipples on the Superman suit.
They put nipples on the Superman.
I mean, yeah, Christopher Reeve's Superman is pretty good. I will say one thing I wasn't a fan of is, like, that guy never really, at least in this movie, he never really perfected how to, like, land, like, make a landing look good with the wires on.
Yeah.
Like, at one point he does this sort of, like, curtsy thing. Every other time he, like, he looks so uncomfortable and just like, wow, what is happening to me? And, like,
yeah, there's definitely
he doesn't really look like he's coming to save the day.
There's some really janky CGI too, which, again, 1983, what are you going to do? But looking at it with today's eyes, it was pretty rough. And I watched this on Amazon Prime streaming, so that there might be some quality issues there.
No.
I don't have it on DVD.
No. It wasn't that. Yeah.
And then I thought it was pretty interesting, like, the way he puts out the fire early on as he goes, he freezes the lake and flies it over. That is, like, exactly what happens in the first Superman and Lois show, where there's, like, a nuclear power plant that's about to melt down, and he goes and freezes a big thing and he flies it over and drops it. Like, it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
must be an homage.
Yeah, I'm thinking this must be what it was, because obviously, you know, this came first, so I would assume it was. And the same thing, I read that the Office Space, basically they stole their plot line from this movie.
Oh yeah, have you never seen Office Space?
Yeah. I just but that's where the idea came from.
Yeah.
So I did look into that. Again, there's some. So he takes a half cent from everybody's paycheck, and he gets paid $85,000.
Yeah.
So the only way for that to work is if that company employs about 17 million people.
Yeah.
So that's not going to work.
Yeah, and that's only the employees that get paid weekly, because he only did it for 1 week. So there must be some biweekly or some monthly employees, some annual salary. I don't know how everybody's paycheck works.
Yeah. But that was a little bit weird. But that whole thing, again, just I don't know. It's kind of weird. It did interest me though. He talks about how he got paid. It was supposed to be $225 a week, but after taxes, he got $145. So I did the math. So basically, he would be making $11,000 a year, which in 1983 would be equivalent to about $36,000 a year today's money, which isn't great, but it's also not terrible. Yeah. It would be terrible to live in New York City on that much money, I imagine. But
probably.
Yeah. So I just thought that was a little bit interesting. But
yeah,
when the Lex Luthor equivalent is like talking about how this is a super genius and he'll never be caught because he's not going to do anything outrageous. And then Gus shows up in a Magnum PI for T-top Ferrari or whatever. Do you notice that he doesn't even park in a parking space? Like he pulls around and just parks in front of the building. And that is not Richard Pryor either. Absolutely 100% not. When he gets out and looks up and then walks away, that just was like, this isn't funny. Why are you doing this?
Yeah. It's not Richard Pryor. It's some white guy in an Afro wig.
Yeah, another thing I found hard with Richard Pryor is, like, I have no reference for him and no, like, reverence for him, where I feel like that was seemingly a big thing at the time of this movie. Like,
yeah, that definitely was a big deal to get him. Yeah. I love Richard Pryor. I think he's hilarious. I had some of his records and albums and listened to him. So I thought it was a big deal. But his character just makes, like, he clearly is at first being manipulated by this Ross Webster guy or whoever, Webster Co. But then he's all on board as long as he gets and then till the very end, he's like, suddenly, no, Richard Pryor can't go out as a bad guy. He should be in jail. Like, Superman lets him off because he helped him. But he has committed egregious crimes. He probably killed lots of people with his tornado in Brazil or Colombia or whatever. He should go to jail for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of found his turn at the end not believable. Like, it's basically, oh, you guys are being mean to Superman now? I can't believe this. Yeah. I didn't know you guys were bad guys, like really bad guys all this time. Like,
he was trying to kill Superman.
Like, he's in on the plot to try to kill Superman at one point.
He hands him what he thinks is an instant death rock to Superman. Yeah. He's like, here you go. It didn't work. But if it had worked, Superman would be dead, and he's the one who handed it. And then all of a sudden, he has a change. Like, it just, no. They just didn't want Richard Pryor to be the bad guy.
No, if you're sitting in the car when your friend robs that liquor store, you're an accessory. So, he is at the very least an accessory to all of these horrific crimes. With a good enough lawyer.
Pretty much. And then at the end, he's like, if your boss has a computer, you could do a lot worse than hire. No, Gus should not be able to touch a computer ever. That should be part of his parole, is that you're not allowed to have electronics anymore.
Yep, definitely.
So, But what did we like about it? Because I feel like I'm being too negative. So was there anything in particular, Colin, that you did like? Or was there a moment, a scene, or something that you're just like, okay, that's Superman to me. I like that.
Honestly, my favorite parts were the Italian guy. I thought that guy stole the show, in my opinion.
Fair enough.
But I did think it was a weird idea that, like, one thing I hate in movies is when you can tell that whoever was writing it clearly just wanted to put something in the movie, regardless of what the surrounding plot was. Like, there's no reason why Superman, like, what's he doing in Italy? Like, he got all evil and then just decided, you know what, the one thing I need to do is go and straighten out the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which might not actually even be a bad thing to do. Like, if you're thinking about it, like, that could be actually helpful, except for the fact that it's a tourist thing. So, I don't know. It was just an odd. I felt that was an odd choice.
So, I asked for you to be positive, and I'm going to turn negative again. So, let's talk about Superman being evil. So, he turns evil, and what does he actually do? He shows up late, so it seems pretty clear, like, some people probably died because of that. Then he blows out the torch. He straightens the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I keep saying pizza.
Does he bang Lorelei?
Oh, he absolutely
does. Yeah.
Okay.
I put that together at the end.
I'm just making sure. Okay. Yeah.
But that wasn't him. Like, that was a different guy.
No, it was you. It was absolutely you. And again, I think there might even be some slight metaphors going on with how he had to go cause that ship to gush first before he could go have sex with her. I do think there was something there intentionally planted. And then he like gets drunk and like flips peanuts at a bar. Like, that's the extent of what he does.
Yeah.
I mean, not good, but I just feel like if you're going to make Superman evil, let's see some actual badness from him. I don't want him murdering people.
He's just being a dick. Like you wanted to see some Homelander shit. That's what you're talking about.
Maybe, or insinuated or something. Just, I don't know.
But even like to go to some, like similar to like how Clark is when he's on like Red K in Smallville, like that opposition, not just like your Superman who, you know, is hungover and hasn't had any coffee yet.
Grumpy Superman. Or emo Superman.
Yeah. At least he didn't do a dance number, I guess, down the street like Sam Raimi movie. So, anyway, okay, so Sean, positives. What did you like about this movie?
I really will keep going back to the Christopher Reeve well. Because whether you like Grumpy Superman or not as a plot device, the portrayal is still, you know, nice. Like, I see three very distinct characters. Actually, four. Because even at the point when, like, Clark Kent comes to life in the junkyard to fight evil Superman, it's a different Clark Kent, but it's not Superman either. Right? Like, it's just physically, like, the capabilities of this man, they were incredible. And so much of that overshadows everything else that goes on in this movie is my love for him as a Superman. Because I will admit that my favorite Superman movie is Superman Returns. But it's because as a Superman, compared to the Man of Steel Snyderverse and everything like that, Brandon Routh channels the likability of Christopher Reeve. And so it's just, it's Christopher Reeve's performance that, as shitty as this movie is, it's still the beacon of light for me overall in this movie.
Is Superman Returns, like, I always thought Superman Returns was essentially meant to be like a retcon Superman 3.
It is presented as if after Superman 2, Superman left and now he just came back. So yeah, in that continuity, Superman 3 and 4 don't exist.
Yeah.
I think that the scrapyard fight, because I watched it on YouTube before I ever watched the movie, and I think as just like a contained scene, it's pretty cool. Like, it's one of the cooler things in this movie. I don't really like it as a plot device in the movie because I think, again, there were better things that could have been done. Like, I would have almost liked, not that I want to see Superman red and blue, but like, to have a splitting of Superman and to have the Superman versus Superman in this movie with, like, Superman essentially having the evil Superman be the main antagonist of the movie, or like a Bizarro or something like that,
yeah,
would have been cool. But I do think that the fight in the scrapyard as a standalone thing was a cool moment.
As a metaphor of him dealing with his demons, fine. Yeah. But in the world of a Superman, I don't think throwing four tires over top of him does a whole lot. He flies. He could have just flew out. Like, that doesn't do anything. And
it's a cool stunt, though.
It's cool. Sort of. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Man who can fly.
Yeah, I was curious because I haven't seen the other two movies. Like, what is the status of Lois and Clark, or Lois and Superman at the end of Superman 2? Like, are they not together yet? Are they not? Do they ever become like an item in these movies?
They hook up in Superman 2. He gives up his powers. He goes into this red kryptonite chamber this red sun chamber that takes away his powers, and he becomes earthly and he becomes a regular man for Lois. And then, like, it turns out that he just has to come back as Superman. And then somehow,
because General Zod and his minions are super beings and they're about to take over the world.
Yeah, they're about to take over the world. So he has to come back and fight them off. And then at the end, he gives her a kiss and it wipes her memory.
Yep, it's referred to as the Super Roofie or the Kryptonite Roofie. He kisses her and she forgets that he's Superman.
Yeah. So, you weird. Know, yeah, just like the cellophane S on his chest, just add that to the, you know, the various powers that you don't expect.
Don't expect anything. But again, I guess what frustrates me about that is it's in that version of the movie, Lois does not care for Clark at all. Like, she probably doesn't want to see Mike fall off a building, but she's absolutely in no way attracted to Clark. It's only Superman she's interested in. And at least with the Lana Lang, you can see that they have some chemistry. They actually, she likes Clark, too. Poor maybe Clark. Even more so than Superman, because she doesn't have a relationship with Superman like Lois does. She wouldn't mind having a relationship with Clark. So she seems to be the better match, and that's just an odd choice, I think.
For Lana, I read that Jennifer Jason Leigh was a possible alternate casting, but they decided ultimately that she was too young. And then I Googled their ages, and they're a decade age difference. Jennifer Jason Leigh is 60 now. Annette O'Toole is 70. Annette O'Toole is 70, man.
That's nuts.
Michael McKean, man. Good on you.
Gilf.
Like, Like, with Jimmy Olsen, is he in the other movies, or is this his first? Okay.
Yeah, he's in all of them.
Yeah.
I did want to talk a little bit about the sound design. There are parts of this movie that sound terrible. Like, straight up, I wrote in my notes, like, why is the sound so bad here? And some of it you can tell is, like, ADR lines. But some of my favorite parts are these editing mixes that they do, the way they transition from one scene to the other with the sound rather than with the image. And I'm struggling to think of one. There's one in particular, I think, with, like, the flashing. He said something about all you got to do is hit buttons, and then it cuts to Jimmy Olsen clicking his camera button. But there are several times where there's a sound that basically overlays from one image to the other as the editing point. And I actually thought that was kind of clever.
Yeah.
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 Another part where I laughed was, I think it's when Jimmy first comes and they're showing like the pictures that he took of that event, and it's like one picture of Webster and then a whole bunch of pictures of that girl's boobs.
Yep.
So funny.
Yeah. Well, and the little side quest with the contest winners that we've got going on. I mean. Yeah, I almost wish they had used them more, because if you're going to have that as a running joke, it's like, well, you should have had them more than just the once in, like, you know, putting them in peril for the tornado.
That was another scene that I actually thought worked very well from a comedic standpoint. The whole thing with the administrative assistant trying to get Perry to pull the numbers, and he pulls one and he walks away, and then she has to get exasperated, and then the crosstalk between Lois wanting to go on vacation and Clark wanting to go on vacation, then Perry's like, I can't, I'm sad I'm losing my best reporter, and he's talking about Lois not going. I thought that was great. I want the whole movie to be that type of, like, writing was really tight, well executed. I want to know who wrote that scene, and then I want to know who wrote all the other stupid shit.
Daily Planet stuff is stuff that this particular franchise has always done well. Oh, and by the way, this just hit me. The fact that Clark and Lois do sleep together in Superman 2 is the reason for the weird mutant kid in Superman Returns. So
I was like, to go back to positives as I'm thinking about it, like, I do think the stuff in Metropolis, like with the Daily Planet, is good. The Smallville stuff, like all the stuff with Clark and Lana, I think is like the hype, like, point of the movie.
Sneezing at the bowling alley.
Yeah. All the stuff where he's like with that, her, like, I don't know if it's like her ex-boyfriend or like just her, some guy who's into her or whatever. Like, I like all that stuff. I really think it's just the shoehorning of Richard Pryor really drags the movie down. Like, there's a lot, like, in searching for reviews that we'll read at the end of this movie, like, I would say 90% of them just talk about, like, how it was, like, competing to be, like, a Superman movie or a Richard Pryor movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and I think Richard Pryor went out.
Uh-huh.
And, like, even when I was doing my, like, trying to write my 60-second synopsis, I was like, really, it's, like, the whole driver for, like, the first third of the movie is just what is Gus doing and everything that's happening with him. And then, you know, like, Clark and Superman, that story is really the B-plot. Mm-hmm. And then Superman just shows up here and there to, like, kind of interfere with Gus and Webster's plans or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I also kind of was wondering why they chose to have Webster who is basically just Lex Luthor, in my opinion. Like, why not have Lex back? I've said this before. I'm not a fan of Gene Hackman. I don't do a Lex with hair. Like, that's not my vibe. So, like, I don't know. But why did Gene Hackman not come back to, or did they just not want? Did something happen to Lex in the other movies?
I'm wondering whether I didn't find anything in my research about Gene Hackman. I know that a lot of stuff went down because both Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve were protesting the fact that Richard Donner was fired.
Yeah.
And so that's why Margot Kidder was cut. And like Michael mentioned near the top, there was a point where Christopher Reeve wasn't going to come back and they were looking to recast him. And they looked at John Travolta, Jeff Bridges, and Kurt Russell.
Oh, man. John Travolta. But, what kind of Superman movie would that be? Yeah.
Weird. Whoa, hey, Lois. Hey, Lois.
We would have got a dancing scene then.
Yeah, that's right. But they actually ended up casting Tony Danza. And a few days before production started, Christopher Reeve is like, fine, I'll do it. But he had the concessions of, I want control over the script and stuff like that. So they got Christopher Reeve back. But yeah, we almost had a Tony Danza Superman movie. So there was a lot of weird stuff going on because of Richard Donner. So I'm wondering whether Gene Hackman might have also fallen through the cracks when they had the change in leadership. But I didn't find anything that confirms that. That would just be educated guess.
But I also disagree that I don't think, as much as I love the character of Lex Luthor and you know, being the antagonist to Superman, I don't know that if we're doing a third one, we need the same villain again. Like, we've already done that basically 1.5 times. So I think it makes sense to switch over. But if you're going to switch over, don't switch over to a different billionaire.
Yeah, I guess
who's
that's
a criminal
point.
Mastermind who's trying to kill Superman. Like, that is... It's Lex Luthor already owns that segment, so that's why it should have been like Brainiac or Bizarro or one of the other thousand villains in Superman's rogues gallery.
I would have liked to see Gus with his coding skills or whatever. Like, it's more reasonable to think like if he is some like computer savant but doesn't really know what he's doing, that he would just backwards create Brainiac, and then Brainiac would be the one manipulating him.
Well, that's what happened, except it was at the end. Like, that computer was basically Brainiac. It became self-aware, that, you know, that whole thing. But I agree with you. I think a more interesting story would have been that Gus isn't a bad guy, but he's maybe a little greedy, maybe a little selfish. Because remember when he first started messing with the computers and we had that little montage of all the weird stuff that was happening, like the Bloomingdale's bill went skyrocketed. It was just nonsensical stuff was happening. Make that the movie. He's not intentionally hurting anybody, but because he's selfishly getting what he wants, the computers are like, they're not designed to do what he's using them to do. And it has all these unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. That way you get to keep Gus pure. Once he realizes what's happening, it's a better turn rather than I tried to kill Superman and failed, so now I'm a good guy, versus like, I just wanted a nice car and a nice apartment. I didn't know that I was causing tornadoes in South America. But you could still have Superman going around and solving all these problems, trying to put it together and not making any sense. And I don't know. I think that I don't like another millionaire, billionaire, bad guy. If either, just give me Gene Hackman or don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why I like Superman 2 so much out of these four is just the fact that, okay, you end up throwing a superpowered villain at him. And to go from a superpower villain to, well, if you walk into this room, you can't defeat this computer. But outside of this room, you're perfectly safe, quite frankly. You know, it just it doesn't have the same finale to it as the past, you know, Superman movie did.
Yeah.
I mean, at least four, they bring back the idea of a superpowered villain, even if it's, you know... poorly done.
Yeah. And I get it's 1983. I think like a lot of Superman stories nowadays like hinge on the idea of like Krypton coming back to haunt him, which is why I like the Brainiac idea so much, because it's just like it's like he's a guy who doesn't really know what he's about. He's just, it's slowly being unraveled for him. And I think in movies anyways, and for like the viewing public who may not be as like up on the Superman mythology, I like those stories that kind of are like, oh, well, look, he's going to learn a little bit more about Krypton and what happened there. And now it's going to affect him in like his present day and that sort of thing. But it seems like in the movies, it's kind of just like they remove that aspect of it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also, like, if I were to change another thing in this movie, I think I would have wanted more touches between Gus and Superman throughout the movie, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, there is, I mean, he sees him when he's the general and he tries to kill him, but, like, really, his only touch with Gus is at the end, kind of, when Gus decides he's going to be a good guy, and then Superman pulls him out of the rubble and flies him to his new job. But it's like, it doesn't really make sense. Like, there's no real reason.
We do have one scene where Clark Kent hits him in the nuts with a car door.
Oh, that's true.
When he first gets to Smallville, before he gets Brad drunk, he's walking through the parking lot and Clark bangs him in the with a car door.
Yeah,
that's true. But I see your point. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have, like, the funny thing is, this is the first movie that Christopher Reeve is actually top billed for.
I know, that is so wild to me.
Yeah, because Superman 1, it's Marlon Brando gets top billing.
Yeah,
and,
that's
for
so
5 minutes.
Yeah, and Gene Hackman gets billing over him. In this one, or in the second one, Gene Hackman still got top billing.
Yep.
And so this is the first time he's actually had his name above. But, I mean, it's dangerously close to losing it to Richard Pryor with how aggressive Richard Pryor's scenes are in this movie. So, yes, it would have been nice if maybe Clark Kent was in a few more of his scenes.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that Richard Pryor isn't top billing on this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it would have almost been more fun to have a little bit more Daily Planet, where Gus Gorman works in the Daily Planet doing something with computers. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I mean, I guess it's the early 80s, so there was no computer department at a newspaper. God, you wouldn't have that.
Yeah, even the computers that are there, kind of, I was like, oh yeah, that's what a computer was back in the day.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But, you know, mentioning the Daily Planet, I think that's as good a time as any to go to Sponsorship Corner!
I was gonna say you're gonna be lost at how to get the sponsorship corner on this one, because it's like the plot has been abandoned.
Yeah. No, this is a chaos episode. I love it. Episode 100. Don't mind us. So always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Superman 3 is brought to you by Coke, Tab, and Pepsi Cola, Hertz, GMC, Plymouth, Ferrari, and Mercedes Cars, Scott Fire Trucks, Century Savings Bank, St. Louis Hotel, TWA and Pan Am Airlines, Time Magazine, Trailways Bus Line, AMF Bowling Equipment, Pentax Cameras, Booths and Beef Eater Gin, Schlitz Beer, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Lee's Roast Beef, CBS, American Express, and Camel Cigarettes. Kids, get your camels. Plus the fictional Archibald Data Processing School, Smallville Grocery, Wheat King Smallville, and the Daily Planet. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. There are actually several mentions of KFC in this movie. And there I are. Guess it's because Calgary... And as an Albertan, I should know this. As someone that was actually born in Calgary, I should know this, but I didn't. Calgary is where the first KFC in Canada opened up. Mm. Which makes sense considering, you know, I guess Kentucky Fried Chicken goes with rodeo, doesn't it?
Sure.
But yeah, so that's why there's a bit of a bunch of name drops in KFC.
Yeah, there's a bunch of comments. And then also even the little... bow tie thing that Gus wears when he gets into the Wheat King factory and gets Brad drunk is the same bow tie that Colonel Sanders is known to wear.
So yeah, it's fun because of the fact that I did live in that city for a while, and in the background at one point you can see the Calgary Tower. You know, you can see a couple of their sea trains pass by. Anytime I go to Calgary, because I have family down there, I can go past the junkyard where they film the you know, Superman fight. It's kind of cool. I get this nostalgic little trip when I go down there. Or it's neat seeing that in there. I mean, I like living in a place where a movie set is a huge deal. Mm. We got so excited because Pedro Pascal was in town a little while ago filming some of his Last of Us for HBO. And
nice.
Yeah. But it was a huge deal.
Yeah, they like,
oh my God,
they like
movie set in town.
They like shut down a street and made it all look like post-apocalyptic with flipped over cars and all that stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Our legislature building, which is our like provincial government building here, they also had decorated a side of that to look all dilapidated and vine covered and stuff like that. It's like, right on.
Kind of makes me want to live in Georgia because that's where all the Marvel movies are filmed now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things are filmed in Georgia.
Yeah, Hotlanta, the new Hollywood.
I have to say, I felt the most egregious. I like, Sean will know from doing 100 episodes, I'm not like the keenest eye when it comes to picking up like continuity errors or like things that weren't wiped out. But in that scene when Superman is going to save Ricky from the Combine, there was noticeable wire action on the back.
Well, it was very clear that there was a powerful thunderstorm about to erupt any minute. Why would you go for a picnic when it's about to be a rainstorm? Like, it's just throughout the whole scene, there's this constant like thunder rolling, which I
well,
was cool. But...
And you're in Kansas, and Kansas is known for, if there's thunder, there's a good chance there may be a very strong circular wind coming your way.
It's called Tornado Alley for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what time of year I don't know if it was tornado season when their reunion was happening, but yeah.
I mean, as a farmer, I was more upset that, like, Superman has super speed. He had the ability to just, like, fly past, pick Ricky up, and go out of the way. He didn't have to, like, destroy that, like, tens of thousand-dollar piece of machinery.
Yeah, he pretty much put that farm out of business, probably.
Well, he might as well have, like, put up a single finger and done, like, a shame on you,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not
doing your job.
How dare you not, like, be able to see to the bottom of this tall wheat to see this small child crumpled? And what happened to Ricky? Like, how...
Like, I think he's just clumsy.
He just tripped and hit his head on a rock?
I think that's the conceit.
In the middle of a wheat field that is plowed and, you know, tilled... A lot, I would assume. I don't know. I'm not a farmer.
Yeah. Do you think those balloon contraptions that the bad guys are flying down into the canyon with, are actually a possible thing?
I don't know. I was curious about that because it seemed like such a weird thing that makes me think that it must be real. But it also might just be like, this is how rich they are. They can afford this thing that clearly doesn't exist. So I don't actually know. I would be curious to find out.
Yeah. I've seen Adam Savage from Mythbusters has a new series out. It's Savage Builds.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a few.
And
of them.
He built a rocket or an Iron Man suit because someone has an actual working jet pack that they have invented, and it's like, oh my God, like the Jetsons are here. You know, James Bond wore a jet pack in the '60s. You know, oh my God, rocket powered flight is actually here now. It was pretty impressive, and so yeah.
But I did want to talk a bit about his office, though. That gray, shaggy carpet everywhere. He had a water fountain in the middle of his shag carpet. There's also like a gym and like a...
Oh, yeah.
The spinny... So he had a spinny shelf bar thing that they... We have a little...
Mr. Webster lives like a pimp. I mean, that's all you need to know, you know?
Is Lorelai his girlfriend? Like...
It's his psychic... what do you call her? A psychic dietitian is what he called her. But I'm thinking there was some meat handling going on in there.
Vera is sister, though, right?
Yes, sister. Younger sister.
Yeah, younger sister.
Yeah. And there's this little plot line about how Lorelai is obviously very smart, but she pretends to be a ditzy blonde.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. would Webster not appreciate someone with her looks and having a brain? Like, I don't get why she needed to try to hide it or what.
No, I think he's got a misogynistic streak.
Well, I think it's playing on, I don't know. I feel like that would have been like a common trope of the time of like the ditzy blonde. Like, and the fact that she's so very, very clearly playing dumb. Mm. But I did think it was weird. There's not really any like payoff of that.
Not
it's
really.
Just a, it's just a character trait.
Well, I've heard before that in every show or movie, every actor has a secret that their character knows that no one else knows. So maybe that was just her character secret that she was secretly smart.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I guess she can't be like an exclusive girlfriend of Mr. Webster, though. Because, I mean, you know, she does throw herself at Superman. She does.
I'm pretty sure that was
Superman.
At his behest, though.
But that was his plan. Right. Like, that's part of his plot.
Well, but that's why I'm wondering, like, did he throw his girlfriend into that? Do they have an indecent proposal type arrangement? Open relationship? Or is it just, I don't know. He must bang her on the side, but I don't think she's actually his girlfriend. He's probably got a wife we never see.
Probably. Yeah.
I still do think it was bananas that Superman clearly slept with her.
That's like the most unsuper. That's the most bad Superman thing he does in this movie.
That's right. Well, you think that's worse than flicking peanuts at a mirror?
Well, I think he was flicking the peanuts at the mirror because he hates himself.
Yeah,
so. He's a mean drunk.
He's just, yeah, he's like an angry drunken uncle, you know, just hanging out in the bar.
Yeah.
It seems like he kind of gets a 5 o'clock shadow, but when he's evil Superman, I would have loved for them to do the Star Trek, like,
oh, goatee.
The goatee. Yeah.
That's how you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read about that scene. There was a mixture of split screen and then a lot of stand in. I think the stand in work was actually done pretty well, but the split screen stuff does not hold up.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the stuff, as you mentioned at the top, does not hold up. I mean, you know, like flying Gus through the canyon, that's some pretty bad background on that part, you know, things like that.
Yeah, that was tough.
I mean, The acid fire is a pretty terrible one as well. I mean, the giant floating iceberg. I mean, now with the fire, all those firefighters are actual real firefighters, real Alberta firefighters right nice. There. They filmed like the Smallville stuff up near High River. High River is a place, right?
Yeah.
Down near?
No.
Is it fire?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
it's nearby.
And so I think this plant stuff was also filmed there. But yeah, those are all real firefighters, except the one black firefighter who is an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, he's the one that gets all the real lines. He's right. Like the chief.
Because he's
front.
The actor.
Yeah.
He was the diversity hire.
He was the diversity. Yeah.
Well, it makes me think that there probably wasn't a black fireman there. So they had to bring him in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't be shocking.
All right. So I do want to ask, though. Well, there's two things I want to talk about quickly. So one of the things, I do love Superman Returns as well. It's one of my favorite Superman movies. I think it's way underrated. I think it's much better than it gets credit for, though the director is now very problematic. So there's that too.
And the kid thread. I don't like the kid thread, but everything else I love about that movie.
So one of the things that I really like about that movie is that James, is it Masters?
Yeah,
Marsters.
Is it Marsters? Because there's also the guy who plays Brainiac in...
Oh, no. Brainiac and Smallville is James Marsters.
Marsters.
It's Marsden.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Marsden. Okay. Yeah.
He's like the biggest hero in that movie. Because he puts his life on the line to save Superman, and he's just the normal dude. Well, we get a similar scene here with that scientist who refuses to leave the chemical factory because he has to stay there and monitor. He has absolutely no control. There's nothing he can do, but he stays just to watch the world blow up, apparently. But that is sort of an act of heroism or ignorance, you know, depending on your definitions of it. So I think that's interesting. I do not buy for a second that a self-aware sentient computer that can just like robotize, cyborgize this lady and create kryptonite beams wouldn't be able to analyze that liquid and go, oh, I know what that is. When it gets hot, it turns into acid. Like the whole resolution is that the computer was too dumb to know a thing that Superman happens to know because of an earlier save. I like that in theory, like the callback to that. But the execution just does not sit well with me. I can't believe the computer would actually have fallen for that.
Yeah. Well, I'm also wondering how rapidly would that water cool down those beakers? Because I feel like at that point you have shattered beakers, or it's only like they could, it could all pool on the floor and it would still be okay as long as it doesn't get too hot.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So should we have a chemical plant full of things that if it just gets too hot, it destroys the world? Like that seems like a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like it's time to dilute that stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I like the idea of a callback being how we saved the day, but the execution there was did not work for me.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I've noticed, you know, we've talked about the wackiness of the tone for this movie, is I feel like this one was made more for a younger audience. Like, it's almost like they looked at the first two and went, ooh, those are a little heavy for kids. I mean, you know, fast forward 25 years when you've got Man of Steel come out. But, you know, but I feel like this is kind of their way of trying to bring kids back into it, which is why they brought in the humor. But like I mentioned in Sponsorship Corner, I love how there's sponsorships from a couple different gins and a beer company. And, of course, cigarettes are the things that really, you know, mess up the day because Gus gets inspired by looking at his pack of smokes and, oh, well, there we go. We'll just add tar to the unknown substance.
Yeah. I mean, he says he's not going to smoke it, so. Yeah. I mean, I like to think that Joe Cool is the Superman of cigarette mascots.
So did he basically, like, 3D print this crystal? Like, how did it make this crystal just by him punching in the composition into the computer? Okay.
Magic.
I was curious. I looked at the printout where it's like the plutonium and the tantalium and all these different things. I added up all the numbers because I wanted to be like, did they screw up their math? But no, it all adds up to 100%.
So they got that right. That's one. Good on you.
Yeah, I kind of missed the synthetic kryptonite thing. That was like, I must have looked away or like stopped paying attention for a brief moment because I was just like, how did he create this thing? Yeah. Where did it come from? Like, 1 minute they were talking about it, and then it just seemed to be there.
It makes no sense. The whole plot is that Gus would take satellites to look into space where the planet used to be. But Krypton is an extra galactic planet. It's not in our solar system. So there's nothing that we have that would be able to pinpoint floating rocks in space where a planet used to be. I mean, I guess there is some math, but I think once you get outside of our solar system, I did not buy that at all. Like in the first two, there was kryptonite on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, so that would make more sense if he were just to go steal some of it, or there's like someone's already done this, but the idea of having the satellite look in space for it is just nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my other question is, cause I hadn't seen the other two movies. So I was wondering like, clearly they already know about kryptonite. So it must be on Earth. Why didn't they just go find some or steal some? Why go through the trouble of trying to synthesize?
Well, the issue is there.
See,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Mr. Webster is—he's just the wrong crazy billionaire, evil scientist guy.
Well, I think he's
not in the know.
That's what they did in the first one, They couldn't let it be actual kryptonite because then that would have not had this effect they wanted. So they had to find some reason. But there were other ways to have done that. I think that would have been more successful.
Well, like bring up a different color of kryptonite.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you send him to pick up the green stuff and he picks up the red stuff. You know, because he's colorblind. I don't know.
Or he couldn't get to the green one. Or what? Yeah, there's lots of reasons why.
Yeah. I like to think that the 0.57% of unknown, though, is kryptonite. Yeah, that's probably what the unknown substance was.
It's the soil of a distant planet.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I don't know what else we really have. I mean, just looking through my notes.
I actually stopped taking notes partway through because they were just all, is this supposed to be funny? Is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah. My kind of thought, and I think I mentioned this before, but for the whole movie, it was just kind of like, whose movie is this? Is this a Gus story or is this a Superman story? Like, who am I supposed to care about here?
Yeah.
I just think it was a product of so many different decisions that were made by different people. And then the reality of they wanted Richard Pryor. He was a big get. I did read that after this movie, he signed like a $40 million exclusive contract with Columbia Pictures or something, which again, $40 million in 1983, that's a pretty big deal.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. So yeah, again, I love Richard Pryor. I think he's a wonderful actor and comedian, but I just don't think, I think this was the tonal shift between him and this movie. I think the movie would have been better without him, or I think the movie would have been better with him and just him. Like they could have done something different with his character and he could have been fine, but how they tried to deploy him, I think was a failure.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of goes to show you that even 40 years ago, Warner Brothers still didn't know what they were doing.
They needed a 10-year plan
to an overall vision. Yeah.
That's all they need. 10-year plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I read a lot of books just about like comic history and that kind of stuff. And it seems like DC has just never managed to like figure it out when it comes to movies, except for Batman. Anyone else, they just can't get a handle on it like properly. It just always falls apart.
Yeah. I mean, even that, I'd say they're betting like 50, you know, betting 500 or whatever, because some of those are great and some of them are terrible. And they made a lot of them. So there's a lot of, you know.
I've always said that DC has a pretty strong television game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will always give it up for their television game, because I was sucked into the Arrowverse. You know, we met Michael here through Smallville. I loved Smallville. It's still one of my favorite shows. You know,
they do well. They do well with television. And I think kind of the reason why is because Marvel, like the reason why Marvel movies work is because their characters are like a little bit flashier and just more human at their core, mm-hmm. whereas DC characters are not. And so, like, the reason why I think the TV works better is because it gives the character, you need a lot of time with those characters to really get to know who they are and really humanize them, that you can't do in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the whole thing.
Four and a half.
Marvel heroes are people with powers, and DC heroes are gods.
They're gods.
And that's a very different type of story. And I think both can work. I think the animated run for DC is also impeccable. Young Justice is one of my favorite cartoons ever. And a lot of the movies they put out, like they have almost like every year they come out with a Batman or a Justice League movie. I think those are all top notch compared to some of the Marvel animated stuff, which is like terrible.
Yeah.
But they just can't seem to figure out how to meld the two together and make a movie that works, at least in my opinion. Like, again, I do not care for Justice League, either version. And if I have to watch one, I'm going to watch the shorter one just because it's shorter, because they're both terrible. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I want there to be an amazing Superman movie, but I have not seen one in a very long time.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Superman 3. Oh, boy. Well, now, Colin.
Oh, wait. Are we doing final thoughts, or was that meant to be our final thoughts?
No, we still have reviews to do. We still haven't done the reviews.
I'm an agent of chaos. Like, when I come on here, I mess you guys up. I jump around too much.
I totally forgot how we even do this show. Continue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Colin, Michael, on IMDb, it scored 5.0 out of 10. Yeah. I mean, we've only had like 100 kicks at the can, right? And it has a Metascore of 44. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 29% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 23%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, punching the hole in the side of an oil tanker. Hit us with some reviews.
Okay, Cyrus Von Gideon gives the movie 2 out of 5 stars and says, "The biggest problem with this movie is that it can't seem to decide if it's a Superman movie or a Richard Pryor sci-fi comedy movie. Superman is one of the most iconic superheroes of all time, and it literally feels like this movie isn't even about Superman half the time. In this regard, I would compare it to Masters of the Universe or Godzilla 2014, where the supposed main character was made into a subplot. The only redeeming thing about Superman 3 was the junkyard battle between evil Superman and Clark Kent. When Clark defeats his evil half and turns back into Superman, that was one of the best scenes in the entire 4-movie series. Unfortunately, one good scene does not make a good movie, especially if everything else about the movie was rather lackluster. Not the worst superhero movie, but when the story of Superman becomes a subplot in a movie called Superman, you know it's not going to be pretty."
Masters of the Universe is a fantastic comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where the idea that, you know, Masters of the Universe, the movie, it should have been about He-Man, but of course it ends up being about him getting brought to Earth. So there's all this side plot, and yeah, He-Man isn't really the focus of it. And that nailed it, I think. That hit me. That hit home, man. That hit home.
Yeah. Noah T gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says it has cheesy lines with comedy like it was written by a rejected SNL board member. The only part I thought was executed well was the rendition on Bizarro. Also, Richard Pryor should have stuck to working on actual comedy films.
Yeah. That, you know, the Bizarro comparison right there. You know, we've been talking about the fact that Gus is magic like Mr. Mitsipitalik, and we've got the computer like Brainiac, and yeah, I think something could be said about we also kind of got Bizarro, but instead of making it those three characters, they give us like the B movie version.
Yeah, and I actually had to Google Brainiac and Bizarro like when they were original, like when their first appearances were, because when I was watching the movie I was like, did they just not know? Yeah. But they both came into play in like the late 60s, so they were around.
Well, and it's funny because I also read that they rushed out a comic once they heard about the script for this movie explaining why Lana Lang is a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's 1983 for you. Is it's like, oh, we have to explain why she doesn't have a husband anymore.
Yeah,
and so they filled in the backstory before this movie came out about Lana Lang being a single mom.
I mean, is she hideously disfigured or something? Because why else would she not have a husband? Clearly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So.
The last one, Kevin F. I'm going to say that's Kevin Feige, we'll say.
Okay.
Gives the movie 2 out of 5 stars and says, wow, what kind of train wreck is this? The first 15 to 20 minutes do not even feel like a Superman movie as it plays out like a Richard Pryor comedy. The Richard Pryor characters on its own movie merits should not be a likable character. He starts at embezzling and works his way up to maniacal mastermind. Superman lets him walk away free at the end despite all these crimes. But since it's Richard Pryor, of course he walks free. I do like the Superman and Lana twist, especially after he erased Lois's memory by a preposterous magic kiss in the last movie. But the Superman versus himself scene is straight garbage. Did he split into two, then reform himself? Was that all mental and he wasted that scrapyard for nothing? I have no idea. If you like Superman, give it a go, but expect to be disappointed in several different places. But if you are watching this for Pryor, this is definitely the level of absurdity and slapstick you expect from his comedies.
So I have to ask, were there any good reviews? Like, is there a 5-star in there?
Because
I'd like to hear like someone having a positive review.
Yeah, someone change our mind.
Let me see. I'll do a quick check. Definitely not from the critics. I know that much.
Oh,
yeah.
There's got to be somebody who loves this movie. It's their favorite superhero movie, or it's their favorite Richard Pryor movie.
Well, it's funny. Our guest, when we did Batman the movie, we had brought up that, you know, like Batman and Robin is going to be someone's favorite Batman movie. And he's like, please contact me. I want to know who you are, and I want to celebrate you.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone, this is their favorite movie. For someone else, it might be The Quest for Peace. And that is absolutely batshit crazy, but hey, go figure. Is that the one that has the Eiffel Tower, or is that Superman 2? Where Lois is stuck in the elevator in the Eiffel Tower.
Pretty sure that's
with
2.
With the terrorists. Okay.
I think that's the opening of 2.
Because there's the elevator that gets flown to the moon in the fourth one with the sun guy stuck inside it. Yeah.
Yeah. That he gets his power directly from the sun, just like Superman, but like faster. And so by blocking him in an elevator and taking him to the dark side of the moon, he attempts to defeat him that way.
Oh, yeah. And then there's John Cryer in Superman 4 as well.
Who turns out to be an amazing Lex Luthor in the Supergirl show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lay it on me.
Here, I'll give you some positives. Prashas Singh says 5 out of 5 stars. Superman 3 feels a lot more casual than the first two films. It also adds a lot of comedy thanks to Richard Pryor's presence. The film is a lot lighter in terms of tone, but luckily it sacrifices none of what one can expect from a Superman movie. Lots of action, feel-good moments, and an actor who embodies the character perfectly. Yes, I'm talking about Christopher Reeve, who continues to be one of the greatest things about this film and the entire series. This time, Margot Kidder doesn't get much to do, but Annette O'Toole turns out to be a worthy inclusion. Robert Vaughn is the villain this time, and he is mostly impressive. The action sequences and visual effects are once again stunning. One particular fight sequence stands out due to the choreography and execution. I won't spoil it for you, but one thing I can tell you is it's really fun to watch. Superman 3, as a whole, is just fun like the other two, but don't expect it to be a serious one.
He's talking about the junkyard scene.
Yeah, right? Of course.
Okay.
And then RB007 says 5 out of 5 stars and says, amazing! Just amazing! See, I'm not saying that Henry Cavill and Brandon Routh are bad as Superman, but no one could really be Christopher Reeve as Superman. Yeah, Superman 4 Quest for Peace was really bad. There's no doubt about that. But still, he is the best. When I was a kid, I saw this movie and still now enjoy it a lot. At that time, I didn't know what is Marvel and the DC. At that time, there were only 3 superheroes known to me: Superman, Spider-Man, and Batman. As in India, comics were not as popular as now. In this film, at first I thought the computer genius is the villain, but in the ending I found that he is a good guy. His boss was a bad guy. In the movie, we also got to see the evil version of Superman, and I still don't understand why he became evil for some time. Rather than it has a lot of great scenes, fun, funny scenes, and most of all, it is a very interesting and enjoyable movie. One of the best of my childhood, and I saw many people saying this movie because it is almost a comedy movie and contains a lot of humor. And my question is, MCU movies also contain a lot of humor, and there's no complaint about that. And you complain that the DCEU do not contain humor and is dark. What is this? See, I am not abusing MCU. I love both Marvel and DC, but I'm just saying, be serious, take one away. Or be serious, take one way.
Okay.
The first one, I think, is very accurate. Like, I couldn't disagree with anything that they said. I just think, as a whole, it doesn't live up to 5 out of 5. But I'm happy to know that some people love this movie. That does make me happy. Again, I kind of jumped to the very end, but I would watch this again. I had a pretty good time with it. Not my favorite movie, but I've watched a lot worse.
I love how the go-to for everyone in the positive reviews is, though, but come on.
It's not Christopher Reeve.
It's Christopher Reeve. Yeah. You know, and that's the focus of so many of those positive reviews, is it's like, yeah, but you can't hate Christopher Reeve. Which is, you know, kind of the only positive I could come up with when
Annette O'Toole is smoking.
Right on. So, like I said, 5.0 and 23 from audiences, 44 and 29 from critics. So, Michael, I'll throw it over to you. So you did mention a little bit there, saying that you would watch it again, but wrap it up. Final thoughts of your Superman 3 2022 experience.
I love the first Superman. I just think it's a watershed moment for taking superheroes seriously. It for when it was made and what it did was absolutely incredible. And the third one is a departure. It tries to bring in the humor. I don't think it's as successful, but again, you cannot argue with Christopher Reeve being the best Clark Kent, best Superman. I think Annette O'Toole's along the line was inspired. It's fine. Again, C+ maybe on a good day, but I would watch this again every time. If you tell me I have to watch this or Man of Steel, I will watch this every time. If you tell me I watch this or Justice League, I will watch this every time over those movies.
Right on. Quite an endorsement for the Snyderverse.
Yeah, not a fan, let me tell you.
No, I can't say I am either. Yeah. Like I said, I like a good Clark Kent. Yeah, I know. I mean, for me, I'm sort of fall just in the same sort of area. I love Clark Kent. I sort of enjoyed the Rube Goldberg situation in the opening with all the hijinks and the blind guy painting the road and everything like that. I don't quite understand was it in that scene or was it later on when Gus is creating problems? But there's the point where you have the two walking, the crosswalk guys that get up inside and start fighting each other.
Yeah, that was when Gus was unintentionally causing havoc.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Some of that didn't work.
I mean, that's straight out of Airplane, the movie type of, that's just nonsense.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And so it's to take the movie from being as serious as it was in Superman 2, which is still a campy movie to,
oh, sure.
you know, be frank, but to up the camp factor, to lean into the camp factor, it makes for a messy movie. It's an ugly movie, but it's still a Christopher Reeve movie, Christopher Reeve Superman movie, and he was my Superman, so I'll still always love it, as much as, you know, some of the things that have come since are better. But, you know, can't take away from Christopher Reeve. And like you said, Annette O'Toole as well. I mean, having the Lana story, I did not miss Lois Lane. I was just shocked that I forgot that she wasn't in this movie. Mm-hmm. And that tells me how much that even the last time I watched this movie, I did not miss Lois Lane being in this movie. So, yeah. Colin, bring us home. Superman 3, you saw it for the first time. What did you think of Superman 3?
Well, guys, I will never watch this movie again. Ever. If I have to watch Superman, 100% I'm watching Man of Steel. So take that for what you will. I just think, in my opinion, I have no... Like, Christopher Reeve is fine, as he's probably... I will say he probably is the best, like, portrayal of Clark Kent on film. But I don't know. I think I've grown up in an era where, like, superhero movies serve the fans. And I don't feel like if you're, like, at least by my knowledge of Superman, I don't feel like this movie is... It's just the character is there, but, like, it's not Superman to me. There's nobody else involved in the mythology. It just doesn't really, like, serve what I would want in a Superman movie, so I can't really get behind it. And
well, you do also have to consider, though, in 1983, the fandom wasn't as rabid and aggressive as it is now. I mean, it was, comics were an underground thing in 1983. You know, if you had comics, you were a loser.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this movie to me is like, it's playing on, like, well, people just love to see Superman, but we're not doing anything for those comic book fans. We're just doing it. And you're not living in the world of today where there's, like, superheroes everywhere. Like, people would have been so starved for anything Superman related, I feel like, in 1983, that no matter what it was, they would have went and seen it. But I think, like, there's just nothing about it, or, like, the franchise, really, that makes me want to go back
to it.
Well, it's rewatch. Very dated. Oh, I mean, that's part of it. That's part of the reason why I like Superman Returns, is because it has the charm of these original movies, but they're better made movies because the effects have gotten better. And
I will say that based on what you guys are saying, I definitely have to revisit Superman Returns, because I don't think I've seen that movie since I watched it in theaters when it came out.
Yeah.
But I don't even remember it that well.
Apart from the problematic director and the problematic Lex Luthor, it's a pretty good movie.
All right, yeah. Kevin Spacey's in that movie. I forgot.
Yeah. He's a great Lex Luthor. I mean, it's kind of like we always say on Michael's show about Allison Mack. I mean, you know, garbage person, but man, he did some good stuff in that movie. I like him as Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Just gotta try to find a way to separate art and artist. It's not always possible or easy, but you know,
I would love to see Brandon Routh in a Superman film again. I really liked in Crisis on Infinite Earths and the Arrowverse when he put the super suit back on again.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, but they didn't do it for Tom Welling. Fuck. Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's his thing, though, the, like, no flights, no tights. Like, that's part of his character. It's like, it would almost break the mystique to see Tom Welling in the suit.
He wore it once.
Well, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
From a distance.
You see his chest, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That's where Zack Snyder got his inspiration from for Man of Steel was, let's just film Superman from really far back, because then we don't have to worry as much about the special effects.
Yeah.
And it'll look arty.
And by no means am I saying that Man of Steel is a great movie. I just like, I don't know, I'm a Henry Cavill loyalist, and I really like that Hans Zimmer score in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, Henry Cavill is a really good actor. I really like him on a lot of things, and I think he's a good Superman. My fundamental problem with that is the story of Superman is this alien from another planet gets basically, you know, corn-fed Midwestern morals and becomes a beacon of hope for the entire planet. And Man of Steel is like, but what if his dad was a jerk and told him, hey, don't save people? And yet he still became a hero. Like, they took Kevin Costner, who's one of the best actors on the planet, and said, you're going to be a Pa Kent who is actively working against your son becoming a superhero. Let's see what happens. Like, no. And then he's like, no, just let me die in this tornado. Like, you're super fast. You could move fast enough to get me. No one would even see it. It's a middle of a tornado. Yeah. No one's going to pay attention. But no, let me die. That was the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
That, Martha, it's all bad.
Yeah. For me, the Henry Cavill, however it is, I don't like his Clark Kent. His Clark Kent is too sexy. And... you know, he's not bumbling enough. And that's why I'm not a Henry Cavill loyalist. Is I like him as a Superman. I don't like him as a Clark Kent.
Yeah. I think the difference for me is, like, reading modern Superman comics, they, like, nowadays, like, Superman, there's not as big of a difference between Clark and Superman as there was in the past. So, like, I don't really have that hang up.
Well, he wears special lenses that affect his eyes and stuff like that. Like, there are things about Clark Kent that, you know, posture changes. Like, when you see Christopher Reeve change from Clark Kent to Superman, you see him stand up straighter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that with Henry Cavill. And that's my favorite transformation, is when he stands up straighter. It's like I said, the junkyard Clark Kent being kind of Clark Kent, but not quite. That's what he's doing. He's standing up straighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you physically see it with Christopher Reeve. Like, you see the change, but yeah, I don't with some of the other, Dean Cain was another one that it's like, I felt like Clark Kent wasn't bumbling enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Anyway, well, thank you both for having me on for your 100th episode. Congratulations. Well, that's a big freaking deal. And I hope you celebrate.
Yeah, there we go. Keeping it 100. There we go. Yeah, that is Superman 3. And that's our show for this week. Michael's still trying to derail us even at the end of the show.
Yep.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to real... Oh, sorry. Fuck. See, now I'm just all discombobulated. A big, huge thank you to our special guest, Michael Ross. I'm excited because I'm hoping that Superman, even if it's Superman 3, will draw more listeners so that they can finally hear you, because not a lot of people have heard you on our previous episodes that you were on with the Ready to Rumble and Clue. Those aren't highly downloaded episodes, but hopefully the name of Superman will bring people in. Michael, if people want to find you online doing your thing, now's your time. Plug your shit.
So I'm most active on Twitter at the RPG Academy. That is primarily what I do in the space. I do all kinds of podcasts about role-playing games and how to get started, how to be better at them. We do interviews with the designers. We talk about Kickstarters. We run actual games and you can listen. So we run the gambit. And then, because that wasn't enough for me to do, I started a second podcast called Farm to Fable, and that is a Smallville rewatch fan cast. We are going back and rewatching every episode of the 10-season run of the Smallville show. And sort of the gadget of that episode is that every episode I have a different co-host. I have sort of a retinue of returning co-hosts that cycle through. Both Colin and Sean have been on multiple times. We're just getting ready to start our season 5 coverage. We're in the middle between season 4 and season 5 right now. So if you do like the show, you've got, that's roughly 100 episodes of that. It's like 80, I guess, 20 per season for 4 seasons. And we're going to do the entire 10-season run. We do take it a little bit more seriously than maybe Talkville, maybe too serious at times. But I also like the fact that we acknowledge the silliness when it's there, but we also try to take it serious as we can. And I'd love for people to come check out the show and see if you like it and hang out with us over there. So, and again, I am an agent of chaos. I'm sorry. I do not mean to be. But as a podcaster myself, I sort of control things more than being a passive observer. And I apologize for that because I know how difficult that can be. But thank you so much for having me back on. I really appreciate it. And I would love to have these conversations again. If you want to wait till the 200th, I get it. But I'm happy to talk about movies anytime.
Well, no, this was 100th, and I was hoping it would run long because I'm like, you know what? Screw it. It's the 100th. If it's a 2-hour episode, I'm posting a 2-hour episode.
Yeah, getting there.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I'm coming up on the episode of Lexmas. I'm excited to come back for that one. And then, yeah, if you want to hear, what were your past episodes? Mine were...
I did Perry, for sure. I remember that one.
Perry. I did Run.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the other one I did was.
Yeah. But we love it. I can't wait for season 5.
Starting soon.
Yeah. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell people. Oh, 100 times now I have asked you people to just share our posts, tell people, word of mouth, spread the gospel of the 100 times I've lost my momentum on that, probably about 50 of them. I screw that up all the time. But tell people, help us get more earballs on the show. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. Give us some stars. Give us 5 of them. A little 5-star review. It just helps the show. It helps drive us up the charts. Helps us get noticed. Helps the algorithms do their computer science work. I mean, Gus is out there. He just needs to have you giving us 5 stars so that he can, you know, give us the extra half cents. And we'll have 85,000... No, I don't know how that works.
We need Gus to go to the computer and to say, "Make, I used to like this one, the number one podcast." Again, it would just happen.
That's right. Magic. Yeah, I lost the metaphor halfway through. I was trying something there. But, or you could also become a producer of the show. You could go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, donate to the cause of this show, help keep it running, and become part of our Patreon family, and you become an executive producer and get a shout out, just like Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you'll find all 100 episodes of our podcast, as well as links to our social media pages. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more content from me, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next week. Now that we're on the other side of 100, it's time for some Halloween episodes. Next time on I Used to Like This One.
Nice.